Welcome to the Security Sessions podcast, brought to you by Talyst and hosted by me, Nera Jones. In this podcast series, we'll be discussing the technologies, people, and processes behind information security and delving into topics like data security, remote access, and digital transformation. We'll be speaking to Talyst and industry experts to bring you fresh perspectives on how to navigate the world of cloud security. Today, in episode 1 of series 2, we will be discussing the Talyst Access Management Index. The 2021 Talyst Access Management Index is a global survey of 2,600 IT decision makers commissioned by Talyst and conducted by 451 Research, part of S&P Global Market Intelligence. As COVID-19 quickly ushered in the era of remote work, introducing new risks that IT professionals are struggling to manage with existing security tools, according to a new Talyst study, 6 in 10 respondents said that traditional security tools such as VPNs are still the primary vehicle for employees accessing applications remotely. Likely the reason why almost half were not confident that their access security systems could scale effectively to secure remote work. In this episode, I am delighted to introduce François Lanier, VP of Identity and Access Management at Talyst, to talk through the key findings of the 2021 report. It is my pleasure to welcome you today, François. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Neha. I mean, my pleasure as well to be able to participate to this interview. Thank you.
You're very welcome, François. So very exciting to have this new report with us today. So let's dig into it a bit more. Why is there still such a lack of maturity in understanding and investing in access control technologies?
Well, to be honest with you, it's not a surprise, right? I mean, when I saw the result of the survey, I think, you know, we can always debate and comment about the pace of digital transformation happening in the enterprise. There is definitely a wide range, you know, of organizations that are moving at different pace, right? So it's all part of that digital transformation that is underway. But the lack of maturity is also, I mean, lack of mindshare and lack of bandwidth, right? I mean, we are dealing with many organizations that have day-to-day priorities, especially on the IT and security front. Most of these organizations are in firefighting mode due to, obviously, I mean, COVID that happened last year, but ransomware and new threat vectors, all of that, right? So what we are finding out is that big projects, right, that are linked to digital transformation, such as, you know, zero trust concept and access management, all of that, right, are definitely struggling to get priority and mind share compared to day-to-day priorities of many of our customers, right? So I think that that's one of the reasons. The other, you know, I mean, challenge also, there's definitely more data points, you know, in the surveys around the weight of legacy infrastructure. Many of these organizations are dealing, you know, with old legacy infrastructure, and they have to maintain these at least because, you know, they are addressing at least, you know, they are the bare bone. I mean, sorry, the backbone, I would say, of most of these organizations' infrastructure. So that's delaying a little bit also, I mean, the change of mindset required with, you know, access management and zero trust concept, right? Now, on the other hand, that being said, I think there's a lot happening as well to increase the level of awareness. Just to give you an example, I mean, the presidential directive, you know, in the U.S. That was enacted, you know, back in May, you know, has really created a very, very strong level of awareness beyond the government space, right? So a lot of organizations are paying attention to now some of these directives. So that's definitely going in the right direction, right? But I hope that gives you some indication of why, you know, I mean, this lack of maturity, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned zero trust just now, and we've been talking about zero trust quite a lot during series one. So, and you mentioned some of the challenges, perhaps also driven by the pandemic. It has been a very unusual 2 years. But when we specifically talk about zero trust security, you mentioned one of the challenges may be perhaps legacy infrastructures and other files to fight. Are there any other challenges in terms of the adoption of zero trust in general? Because everyone in your report seems to be interested, but yet there's not much deployment.
Yeah, I think it starts obviously with awareness, right? So a lot of people, I would say even a year ago, were probably not even aware, right, of zero trust. Then, you know, it became kind of a buzzword, you know, overused to mean many different things. And it's only now that it's starting, you know, to really get to the point where people understand the concept behind it. Now, that being said, you know, I think we all agree in the industry that zero trust, you know, is not a solution, by the way, right? I mean, zero trust is a new model, a new approach. And everybody, you know, including, by the way, the OMB, you know, the Office of Management and Budget in the U.S., that actually wrote a report following the presidential directive, explained that it's going to be a long journey, right? So no organization should assume that, hey, I like zero trust, I have interest in zero trust, so let's go ahead and implement it. That's not the way it's going to work, right? I mean, zero trust is a new security model. There are many, many pragmatic steps and small steps that can be taken to go in that direction. And for many organizations, it's going to be a long journey anyway. And then, you know, I mean, maybe another point I could indicate, you know, in terms of interest in zero trust, but, you know, the adoption remaining low, is that there has been also two different approaches to zero trust. What I mean, one, that is more network centric, you know, what we call zero trust network access, which is, you know, a path that most of the network security providers are taking. And they are, you know, it's very much linked to how to segment, you know, a network infrastructure through segment, I mean, micro segmentation of these infrastructure and so on and so forth. And then there is more of an identity centric zero trust model. That we've been preaching, right? Which is this decision based on identities, access decision based on identities, and I think that at the beginning there was maybe some confusion, you know, about in the end there are different approaches. So what does it mean, right? Me as an organization, what should I be doing? And we've seen more and more, you know, analyst reports that have been clarifying this topic to the benefit of the industry as a whole. And there are some of these reports. I mean, one actually was it's a research paper from Gartner, did a very good job at explaining how these two models are actually quite complementary, right? So meaning that actually a zero trust network access model can definitely benefit, you know, from identity events. So it can feed from identity centric zero trust solutions, and vice versa. Identity-centric solution can also feed, you know, from intelligence standpoint, from the network level events, to be able to take more granular access decisions, right? So the two models are no more, I mean, you know, perceived at least by the industry as conflicting models. They are really perceived as complementary models. And that should also benefit, you know, the whole industry, because customers are going to eventually understand the benefits of both approach, right?
Thank you, François. And I think that the difference between the two models needed to be explained. So thank you for that. So you just mentioned that embarking in such a venture, it's pretty much similar to what everyone's been going through over the past 2 years when they're saying we want to do digital transformation. So we now have a new model and a new approach. It's very much a journey, which essentially is a quite a large change program for organization. So bearing in mind that we've got, you know, two models that are complementary and we want to deploy this, not that we are there and we're becoming more and more digital, have you got any advice for us in terms of what are the key areas that businesses should prioritize first in order to address the challenges created by the situation we're in?
Yeah, I mean, I can give it a try at least, right? I mean, at a high level, I would say everything that has been happening, right? Whether we talk about COVID or the new waves of ransomware, and I think all that is a good opportunity for many organizations to challenge a little bit their model and rethink, you know, not only in the context, you know, of these events, but give themselves the opportunity to take a step back and look at what type of organizations, especially from an IT standpoint, they want to become for the next 10, 20 years, right? Because I think what COVID also has really highlighted is there's been significant changes in work habits, right? In terms of how employees are connecting to the enterprise, from where, how they want to be able to work as well and access, you know, I mean, enterprise resources. They want flexibility, you know, in terms of devices that they can use to access these applications and so on and so forth, right? So there's been a profound sociological impact in terms of redefining the workplace, right? And so this is really an opportunity now for organizations to rethink the whole model that they have in that context, right? And when you start doing that, then you clearly, you know, I mean, start also to appreciate the value that models such as Zero Trust bring, right? Because they are not just a new security model. They are also new philosophy, new approach that really enable a full flexible enterprise, right? And a modern workspace. Especially one of the main benefits, you know, I keep indicating to my customers is the fact that the main benefit is companies don't need to plan security based on where applications reside, right? So current security models, for instance, you know, are very static, depending on whether an application resides on premise, you know, within the boundary of the enterprise perimeter, or whether the application resides in a private cloud, or whether the application is actually a SaaS, you know, I mean, an as a service delivered application in the cloud. So depending on where applications reside, the current security models are very rigid, right? You need to say, okay, if my application is on-premise, then I'm going to protect it through my VPN, right? If my application is in the private cloud, I'm going to use eventually, you know, some form of Zero Trust Network Access solution, right? If my application is in the cloud, then I'm going to try to rely on the cloud vendor to provide, you know, some of the access control, right? So it's very rigid and very heterogeneous as well, right? Meaning you don't have actually central access policies. And the main benefit of a Zero Trust model is that you create an abstraction layer, meaning now you can define policies, global policies, irrespective of where application and resources that you're trying to protect are. And I think this is very empowering, right? When customers start realizing that, how, you know, beneficial it will be, not only from a security standpoint, but from a manageability standpoint and from a flexibility standpoint, that's already opened, you know, a lot of eyes. Because now companies can start, you know, thinking about, hey, I may have an application that today is on-premise or in my private cloud, but 2 or 3 years from now, that application may actually migrate, you know, to a public cloud application. And the fact that if I take a Zero Trust model approach, I will not have to completely redefine, you know, my security posture when that migration happens is a huge benefit, right? It's going to simplify my life. It's going to, you know, reduce the threat vectors. It's going to make it seamless, you know, for my end users because, you know, they are going to be able to access these applications transparently with no change, you know, of user experience. So there are a lot of tangible benefits beyond security that this can create, right? So clearly, I think my main advice is for organizations not to look at it in reactive mode, right? And look at it as kind of an impediment or as an annoyance, right? But more as an opportunity to redefine how their organizations are going to be ready for the next 10 to 20 years, right? And ready not just from a security standpoint, but from a workplace standpoint, right?
Absolutely. That's fascinating. In fact, there was a very interesting set of results in the Thales Access Management Index suggesting that the multi-factor authentication is used more by users of cloud application than those on premise, which is interesting looking at what you've just described right now. And it feels like perhaps it seems to gel with what we were saying earlier on about perhaps legacy infrastructures. And you've just described some ways in which organization can look at the deployment of zero trust in general as an approach and a philosophy rather than a set of technology, and to be able to re-engineer processes. So suggesting perhaps that because that suggests disparate processes, as you've just mentioned to me. So do you think this will have an effect on insider threats in general, perhaps?
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, I mean, that part of the survey that you mentioned, right, which is MFA is used more, you know, for cloud application than for on-premise applications, surprised me, right? So that's why we have to eventually look beyond just the raw response data, because at the end of the day, I mean, the main use case, you know, for MFA has been, you know, VPN access, right, which is one way of protecting remote access. But on the other hand, it illustrates an important fact, again, an important point that I made around the concept of zero trust versus perimeter, you know, security, is that typically, how companies have been protecting their on-premise resources has been through a VPN, right? So that's what we call perimeter security, because you try then to, identify, authenticate the user as they come from outside to inside the organization, right? But then after once they're inside and once you've been authenticating them, then they have access to everything, right? So everything inside the organization. So there's no additional, control points beyond the VPN, and that's a big challenge, right? Of perimeter security. The other point, by the way, in that response, which is insider threat, right? The accessing, threat against on-premise applications is not an insider threat versus, outsider threat discussion, because at the end of the day, you can have an insider that will also try to attack, or access resources or applications that are outside, that are in the cloud. And I think that there is a big misconception as well that insider threat, is the biggest attack vector. The biggest actually insider threat is coming from outside through what we call identity theft, right? So the concept of stealing, a credential like a username and password from an outsider, but then using that credential to actually bypass or actually go through all the security control points is the biggest threat vector. And this is a very difficult one to address with perimeter-based defense, because if someone is using a stolen credential, right, then that means that person is going to behave and is going to be perceived by all the security control points of the organization as an insider, right? Because, hey, this is a valid credential, right? So to me as an organization, that credential looks like it's coming from a valid employee or valid user. Even so, that's a stolen credential, right? So this is one of the main challenge also about perimeter-based defense, right? Meaning that if you do not keep looking and assessing what users are doing beyond, the perimeter, then you're making yourself, potentially vulnerable to this type of attack. So to me, the biggest issue here is twofold. I mean, the first one is perimeter defense versus, zero trust based approach, basically, access control solutions that are taking decisions in front of each application, right? So meaning even if an employee has been authenticated once, then you keep monitoring, the context. So you keep looking at what the employee is doing, what device is using, where is he connecting from, at what time. and take that into account, you know, each time that employee is trying to access resources. That's the best, you know, measure you can have against insider threat or including ID theft in this case, right? The other, I think, challenge that we are finding out through the survey is the level of MFA or authentication adoption, right? Because many organizations, I mean, most organizations will tell you, I have multi-factor authentication. Actually, we found, you know, that I think it was 62% of organizations say that they already have multi-factor authentication. But in reality, if we dig a little bit deeper, there are two issues with that statement. The first one is that many of these organizations that have MFA typically use two, three, sometimes even four, you know, different authentication methods. So they are deployed in silo. They are point solutions to very specific use case. So between these different solutions, there are gaps in coverage, right? And then the other challenge is the fact that most of these organizations that have deployed MFA have significant gap in coverage, meaning they have applied MFA for VPN, for instance, but there are many other resources that are not within the scope of these solutions. And more importantly, what we found actually in the survey is that many of these organizations have no more than 50% of their population covered by their MFA solution. So meaning that they are, you know, I mean, some category of users that are under the scope of these MFA solutions, but there are many other users, whether these users are external users like contractors and suppliers, or whether these users are in manufacturing, for instance. We find that many manufacturing companies have absolutely no MFA in place for, you know, any manufacturing workers, right, that are accessing kiosk and workstations. There's no MFA in place for this type of population. And these gaps in coverage create huge vulnerabilities, right? So so I think that's why we have to be very cautious about how MFA is being applied in these organizations, how much, you know, is covered, how many solutions are they using, do they have actually, you know, the ability to have global policies in order to increase coverage. These are the important topics that we need to talk about when we hear about MFA deployment.
Oh, absolutely. Disparity of deployment. In fact, that's really interesting that you should mention manufacturing just now, with manufacturing employees on the floor not having MFA yet. They are the ones who are actually using industrial control systems. So it doesn't seem to make sense.
Especially in the context of ransomware, you know, I mean, that's, systems that are very vulnerable. Yeah.
So we've learned a lot of security lessons during the pandemic, and perhaps, I mean, suggesting listening to you, François, perhaps we need to warn security strategists, so to speak, because the world is moving very fast, and criminals indeed innovate very fast as well. So what advice would you give to those security strategists in terms to increasing the agility of their security controls? You've given us a lot of tips just now, but what is your advice for businesses, you know, starting on their journey, so to speak?
Well, I think that clearly probably the biggest advice, right, is not wait until you have the magic plan that is going to address all the problems, right? I think that, you know, I've always mentioned avoid the all or nothing or everything at once, right? Because these are fallacies, right? If you think that you'll be able to say, hey, you know, okay, we are going to develop the super plan and we want to do it all at once, then that's never going to work, right? I think all what we've been talking about here can be done and should be done in a very pragmatic manner. There are things, there are low-hanging fruits, there are things that can be done today, tomorrow, that can take you know, our customers in that journey. And I think recognizing that is a very important piece of the equation, because otherwise, a lot of organizations are overwhelmed eventually by this new concept, right? Zero trust, granular access policies, all of that, right? Most of them are like deer in the headlights, right? Frozen because they have to deal with day-to-day priorities and engaging, you know, into this type of approach or journey that can be very, very complex, could be overwhelming. So So really, I mean, the main recommendation is that it doesn't have to be like that, right? The only way it can be done is actually step by step and working, you know, through the simple use case that can be easily migrated to the new model, right? And typically, I mean, examples that we give is that you can already, you know, I mean, today or tomorrow, start, you know, identifying. So you do a catalog, you know, of all your applications and resources, define priorities based obviously on risk level. And then you can start planning, you know, for a few of these applications that are on top of the list, especially if they're cloud applications, move the security control, you know, to a modern access management solution. That's something that can be done, you know, I mean, in a first step. And then over time, you know, you start thinking about, okay, what are the on-premise applications eventually that need to change, that need to be migrated at least, you know, from their existing SSO, for instance, to a modern access management solution, right? So there's a lot of, you know, pragmatic planning steps that can be done. The other thing, on the other hand, that we uncovered, not just through the survey, but through discussions with customers, that is a mental challenge as well when we talk about more MFA, more granular policies and so on, is the concern about having user pushback, right? So there is, in the mind of many of our customers, access management, zero trust means more control, which means more friction for end users, which means a lot of end user pushback, right? People are going to resign if we implement these solutions, right? That's the fear or anxiety that we can hear, you know, with security people in these organizations. And I think that this is another misconception, right? And this, for us, it had a big impact in how we also position and explain our offer, because the main benefit, actually, of the solutions that we are talking about, right, access management, modern access management solution, is the huge positive impact on end user experience. Because as you are now, you know, centralizing many of these access policies, and now you also have better visibility of what users are doing, you can actually take a lot of decisions of not authenticating users as they move along, as long as, again, the trust and the confidence in that user remains high, right? So one of the main benefits is that you can basically hide as much as possible any authentication step when you rely on this type of solution, as opposed to having fragmented approach, you know, to MFA and security, creates a lot of friction, because each time a user crosses a boundary, they have to be re-authenticated. And that, you know, I mean, creates bad user experience. So we are really, you know, I mean, trying to fight that misconception that these modern solutions are going to create friction. It's the contrary, right? I mean, it's definitely not the case. And then the last point I would like to make is, and for us as a vendor, it's important also to recognize, is the organizational challenges that the modern enterprise are creating. Because IT organizations, you know, and the way, by the way, IT is managed in many organizations is built, again, on the old model, where everything that is central IT is managed by IT, right? And all applications used to be part of IT management, you know, up to 10 years ago. And the reality is now many business organizations within these customers are managing, you know, their own applications directly, not under the control of IT, right? So you may have a sales organization that has deployed, you know, Salesforce.com. They have a Salesforce admin within the sales organization, you know, or sales ops, that is going to manage users and username and password, for instance, and so on, outside the control of IT. And when we bring solutions to the table here, talking about global access policies, continuous authentication, and so on, we have to recognize the fact that many IT organizations don't own these applications anymore. And they don't even know how to set policies for these applications because they are not the owners of these applications. So, for instance, how do I know what is the right behavior of a Salesforce.com user, right? Because I don't manage the application. I don't know who is accessing it. I don't know what type of, you know, access right we should give to these users, right? Because this is managed completely outside my IT organization, right? So when we bring tools and solutions that give these control points, then current IT organizations are struggling, you know, to even make use of them, right? So this is something that, you know, as a vendor, we are adapting to as well, because we are trying now also to provide different level of policy setting, right? Some that can be centrally managed by IT administrators, and some that can actually be managed directly by business owners. So it really shows again that, you know, the whole landscape is evolving. It's not just about technology. It's about change of workplace. And it's a change also of organizations within these companies that need different type of solutions, right?
Thank you, François. That was fascinating. And as in many things in our industry, it's about adaptive, pragmatic risk management at the end of the day, I think. François, you have been a fantastic guest. I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening. You have been listening to episode 1 of series 2 of the Thales Security Session podcast. And today we were discussing the Thales Access Management Index.
Love this episode of the Thales Security Sessions podcast? Search us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast service to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Be sure to visit us at cpl.thalesgroup.com to access previous episodes, bringing you insights from industry experts on the latest cloud and data security news and trends. Thank you for listening.